I'm ready.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Roller Out the Barrel, the Vintage Baseball Podcast, getting to know the players of Vintage Baseball from all over the country. At least that is the plan. Last week's episode had Nick Tufar Sanders from the Columbus Capitals. He's the catcher. And you got to hear about how he's involved in curling. Exciting. And next week's episode is with Ryan Boggs of the Ohio Village Muffins, and he will talk to you about his amateur wrestling background as a wrestler and now as a coach. But today we are going into the Midwest with Cooper Soda Boots Michael of the, I believe you are the manager, captain, GM of the Stars Baseball Club of the Colorado Territory. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm actually the commissioner of the Colorado Vintage Baseball Association. We, you know, kind of do little things a little differently out here in Colorado, I guess.
And we're going to get right into that. What is the setup of your association up there? What are the teams that are in it, and what do you do during the season to declare a champion at the end?
Well, again, you know, the Vintage Baseball, we're here to promote, you know, the history and just the knowledge and the fun being of, you know, baseball in the 19th century. And we have kind of just a blanket association for our whole state. And currently we have three clubs with the Traveling Club, the Star Club, which I am captain of right now. And the three clubs is the Denver Blue Stockings, of course, in Denver, the Colorado Springs DNRG Reds, and then the Inner Ocean Club out of Kansas City. And as far as a championship, we, you know, basically try and get everyone the same amount of games throughout the season. And we have a little, you know, playoff there at the end. The two, you know, losing team records, you know, kind of battle to play the winning team to see who's the, you know, Colorado Territorial champion of that year.
Sure, and, sure. So do you do it? Do you do, excuse me, do you do the, so the team that's on top of the standings kind of gets a first round bye, and two and three would play each other, and then the winner would play one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just kind of a simple, you know, bracket form. If, you know, there were more teams involved, we could bracket it out further, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you guys play by
two losing teams, yeah. Yeah, we played by 1864.
And that's it, pretty much straight across the board. You never really get involved.
Well, the league started in 1993, and they used to play, I mean, pretty much any 19th century year, and it was kind of depending on the event that they were at, on, you know, what was requested. Because, I mean, there was a period where we played 1874 rules, and I think there was even a time where they were playing somewhere in the 1880s rules, so... We jumped around and then kind of settled on the 1864 because it seemed to be the best crowd pleaser, because it does have the bounce. So you get a lot of question of, you know, people asking what the bounce rule or bound rule, as I guess it is officially called. And so that's kind of what we settled on. We do have a couple of modifications. We don't allow the stealing. We leave sliding up to the individual. You know, we just ask everyone to be safe. And that's kind of really it. The other rule that we've incorporated is we do allow a added ball to be interfered with by a base runner, as long as they stay within the base path. I'm not sure exactly how that got started with the league. We know it's not historically correct, and we, you know, strongly represent that at our matches, that, you know, it wasn't, you know, something that was, you know, done in the 1860s. So that's, you know, that's about it. And it's more, I think, for crowds.
So you're referring to shenanigans.
Yeah, exactly. It's more for shenanigans.
And so when you brought shenanigans out to Frankenmuth last year, I got to tell you, it was a shock to some people. But by the time that you guys were done, everybody was requesting to play you guys this next year if you came back.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I believe he has the Canton Corn Shuckers that really, took to it. They were having a lot of fun with it. They were a great group of guys. Actually, everyone out there at the Frankenmuth Festival was amazing to meet and play with and watch play.
So what happens is if you have a runner on base and he's running and the ball comes within,
Say he's running first to second and the ball's hit right up there. As long as he doesn't, interfere with the, baseman making the play, he can, spot it, kick it, just stop it. He just can't pick it up and throw it. So you can, you can hit it, you can punch it. So you can kind of swat it away, but you just can't grab it and throw it.
And you can't, I would assume you're expected to stay within a certain baseline-ish area.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You ever have a situation where somebody ran outside the line, kicked the ball, and the other team got mad?
Oh, yeah, almost half the time someone does that, maneuver, it's usually a big, commotion, So that's, I guess, partly, of the fun, because we do a lot of, events that are sponsored by either the Historical Society or, the town itself. And so we typically play, a team made up of the locals. So it adds a lot of fun for them, too. So.
It's another reason you guys chose 1864. Because that seems to be the easiest year as far as getting membership involved. We find that the whole catching the ball with your bare hands, if you've got that bound in fair territory to back up the fact that you're catching it with a fly ball, it doesn't scare as many people off.
No, it's, I guess that could be part of it. I think it was just also a little more fun, too, for, a spectator. You got a lot more people that were, passing by, if you're playing in a park and they see people catching it on the mound, they tend to, ask more and be, more interactive. So that's part of it. And, definitely it does help with recruiting, because that's the first thing whenever you talk to someone about the vintage ball and you tell them, oh, yeah, we don't wear gloves. And they kind of, their eyes bug up. I'm sure you've experienced the same.
Oh, all the time. All the time.
It definitely helps with the bounce. You go, oh, you can catch it on one bounce. I'm like, oh, okay. But we always tell them, real men catch it on the fly. So.
True. So when we, we... In Michigan, we have over 30 clubs, and same with Ohio. They have over 30, and there's a mix of bound and no bound, and they don't like to play each other very much. So,
I've experienced that, and I tell everyone whenever we're traveling, and if they ask us about certain rules, we'll play by the home rules. It's kind of how we usually. Play it. So, and again, we're just there to play baseball, have fun, and kind of, promote the history side of it when we can.
And you have the traveling club, the Stars. Where are some of the places that you guys have traveled to since you formed that traveling club?
The Star Club's been around for a little over a handful of years. And, as the CVBBA, there were times when, they were going out. I know they've gone to Gettysburg. We've traveled up to Pennsylvania, Massachusetts. We go to the Warren Ballpark in Arizona, Bisbee. That's a great little travel event. But so, we've made it almost coast to coast. We haven't gone out to the West Coast, and I know there's a lot of more California vintage leagues, it looks like, that are popping up, so that's great.
So I'm going to ask you, which I didn't know before going into this interview, but Rudy Frias traveled to Colorado as a part of the Muffins and played in a match. That was probably before your time. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've lived here my whole life. I've been with the league. This will be my seventh year. And they've been around since 1993 is when they first started. And it was actually, they kind of spun off of a First Texas Infantry reenactment group that was led kind of spin off to the baseball was kind of led by Mark Fearless Foster, which I know a lot of the vintage players know that man. Unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago. And the other guy is Pat Deacon, Matthew. They're kind of the main founders of our league back in 1993. And yeah, I actually saw that post, I think, yeah, that he severed somebody or something like that there.
No, he served as one of the announcers of the matches between the Colorado and the Muffins in the 90s. And he wanted to know if you still have the bandstand and bleachers for spectators.
The only field that we play with that kind of fits under is a place up in Victor, Colorado at about 9,000 feet, I believe it is. And it has like a little wooden grandstand and everything. And we play an event up there every year in July. So that may be the one he's referring to. But if it's anything around the Denver area, we don't currently play at any that has like a little, a grandstand or anything of the sorts. We kind of carry a backstop to each of our matches that we kind of set up. So
he also refers.
I wish I knew exactly where he was talking about. I'd love to know.
Oh, I'm sure he'll send you a message to let you know after this airs. He also mentions that there was a threat of rattlesnakes. Is that still a thing?
All throughout Colorado, there's always that possible threat of rattlesnakes. So, and that's, just something you kind of have to live with around here, but it's not that often. You know, every once in a while, you'll hear about someone getting bit by one, but it's I think more a myth than anything. Probably something more to scare him, hoping that he'd be looking at the ground instead of looking up in the air for the ball.
Do you think they prefer to catch it on the bound?
Who, rattlesnakes?
Yes. All right. Cooper, let's go ahead and talk about your personal baseball history from your earliest memories of you playing and seeing baseball all the way up until today.
Well, I guess my earliest kind of memories start with being out in the front yard in the blacktop street, fielding grounders from my dad, and him, not being very PC, but by today's standards, calling us girly, sidestepping it, getting in front of the ball. And that's kind of why he taught us to, play in the street, catch grounders like that. So that's kind of one of the earliest memories I have of baseball. And, I started with T-ball and played all the way up until high school. That's kind of when I stopped playing. I wasn't the, blood, guts, veins in my teeth, live, die for sports type of player. I was kind of just out there having fun, goofing off with friends playing baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't really fit with the high school bunch. So, and that's, some of my other earliest, memories are, playing catch, making a few seasons to the championship, but unfortunately losing to the, other team. So, those upsets, but, baseball was kind of life when I was growing up. We I had two older brother and younger brother who both played, so it was just kind of baseball all summer long. And actually, I had a sister that played too.
What's the seasonal schedule for being able to play baseball out in Colorado?
It usually starts up, you know, March, April. You'll see, you know, games starting to happen. Granted, there's usually a lot of, you know, rain outs and snow outs. Even up through May, you can possibly be snowed out of a baseball game. And then typically October is when the weather starts turning around here, or it can start turning. But sometimes there's Octobers where if we wanted to, we could play through October into November. But it's April to October-ish.
So after high school, there's no organized baseball until...
No, I never had the bug to go play softball. And unfortunately, it took me forever to find this vintage league. I was actually at a, you know, liquor store down in Denver with a couple buddies, you know, gearing up for a Friday night, and there was a flyer on the cash register, and my buddy pointed to it and said, "It looks like something you do." And I took a picture of it with my phone and called them and went to the game was the very next day, went to the game. And by the end of the game, I was signed up with the league.
So you must, you're very involved today, so you must have fell in love almost immediately, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, there's, you know, I love a lot of the, you know, I love the Victorian period, so that kind of fell right in line with that. And, you know, it kind of rekindled my love for baseball again because I kind of fell off. You know, I watched, you know, World Series and stuff like that with my dad, but kind of never followed the league again. But, you know, this kind of re-sparked the love for baseball, and it included the history side of it, which, you know, I think is great. And I'm always trying to find, you know, articles and stuff here from, you know, 19th century, which becomes, it seems a little harder and harder each year, but easier at times because the advent of the internet, a lot of places are, you know, microfiching their stuff online, which is great. So
how old were you your first season of vintage?
I'm sorry, when I first what?
When you first joined vintage baseball, how old were you?
I was 32, I believe. And I'm actually turning 38 here in just a month or so.
How many teams did Colorado have back when you got involved?
When I got involved, there were four teams, and actually I played for one of the teams that went defunct and kind of had to close up and consolidate with another one of the teams. It was It was actually based on a real team, the Star Baseball Club of the Rocky Mountains of Central City, Colorado. We just shortened it to the Central City Star Club.
Okay. And didn't the Colorado Rockies start? The Rockies started in 1993, I think, for play. And that's the same year you guys start the, well, not you, before your time, but the same year that the Colorado Vintage Baseball Association starts. Is Colorado baseball with the Rockies, is that a big deal out there?
When they go to the World Series, it is.
Well, sure.
But, you know, for the most part, you know, there's the hardcore baseball people out here. But, unfortunately, Colorado's not the, you know, baseball town as a lot of towns, you know, the more east you go. I mean, you know, a lot of the, like, St. Louis, you know, a lot of, you know, from starting from about there and going over to Chicago and stuff, you know, that's when baseball really started kind of really becoming more of a thing. Colorado, we just never really had any professional until 93, so I think we just struggled. That's, I think, part of our struggle with the vintage is we just never had the, the mentality of a baseball team. It's more of a football town, I guess.
Oh, well, absolutely. But there's a lot of success there, too. It's amazing how well things go when there's success. But you can always see how well things go when there's failure, just what kind of a sports town you're looking at. And they seem to stick by their Broncos pretty well out there. So.
Yeah. Everyone's heard about the Broncos. So. Yeah. And it's just the way it is. And, you know, we're getting our name out there, and we'll get more and more. I'm hoping here in the next year or so we might be able to add another team back. So,
oh, that's always good. That would give you four. That's a good even number. I like those even numbers. And you guys are coming back out to you're coming back to Michigan, right, for the festival this year, right?
We're still working on that. We're definitely trying to. Again, it's always hard to get people to travel out of state, especially more than one state over. I mean, you guys kind of know the same. It's big states to travel through. So
last year when you guys came, did you all get in one vehicle and drive here, or was
actually only me and my father drove out. Everyone else flew out.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
How far of a drive was that?
How far was that, Dad? That was like 1,400 miles. So about 20 hours. Yeah, we did it in one go, there and back, which wasn't the best idea because it took a good, day and a half to recover from sitting in the car that long.
Oh. Well, yeah.
But it was well worth it. It was probably one of the best and most fun festivals I've been to. Everyone was super nice. You guys put on a great event.
Oh, well, thank you for that. That's nice. Yeah,
and I hope we can make it out this year. We're still working on numbers for that because we have another match that we're actually been asked out to, or actually a couple, and unfortunately we might have to decline them because it's just harder to get people to travel farther east. We've invited, I think, to Tennessee off the top of my head, and I'm not sure if we're going to be able to make it. So,
well, do what you can. If you can't, it's no problem. There are a lot of teams that are very interested in seeing you guys and playing some shenanigans.
I will put this out there too. I am in the works with the city of Fort Collins on a tournament the first weekend of October. And if there are any clubs that are interested in coming out here, I believe it's October 4th and 5th, off the very first weekend. I believe that's the exact date. They were wanting to host a tournament, and they were interested in putting some out-of-state travel teams coming. So the more the merrier. If anyone's interested, definitely contact me. Or if use the avenue of Matthew here, and he can put you through to me.
Well, you can tell everybody. You can tell everybody what your website is right now. They can get you right on the website.
Well, yeah. Well, here I'll give. It's Colorado. It's cbbba.org. There's a link on there for the commissioner's email. And again, I'm the commissioner, so I will be the one receiving that. And we'd love to have you. So if you're interested, definitely come out. And that goes for the Bavarians as well.
And, of course, Cooper's also on the Facebooks. He's doing the social medias, and you can check him out on there and talk to him about baseball if you want to find him on there. That's COO. Yeah. Well, you spell it differently on your Facebook page.
I have it different on my Facebook because I was reluctant on getting one, and I got one because I was in a bunch of bands at the time, and so it was a band promotional tool. And yes, my Facebook is COUPE, and then MICHAEL, so Poop Michael on Facebook. Or I have Instagram, and that is Victorian.Restorations on Instagram.
And so we're gonna. That's a perfect segue, as we're gonna get into some of the things, the other things that you're involved in, and one of the things I noticed is you are a guitar player. Is this correct?
Yes, I am a guitar player.
And you stick to country music with that?
Not necessarily. I grew up kind of listening to punk rock, so there's a lot of punk rock influence in my playing, but I play mandolin also, and that's kind of where more of the country comes out, along with steel guitar. So I definitely love playing my country music, but I also love playing my punk rock music too. So
I assume you take your mandolin down to the field sometimes and play.
I have. We of the Colorado Association, we have team songs, and we typically sing our team song before each match for the crowd. Granted, sometimes we sing better than we play, and other times we play better than we sing. It just depends on who's there that day.
What was the name of the first band you ever got involved in?
The name of the first band I got involved in was a band called Biz Orange. And that was a couple of guys I grew up with and went to grade school with. And, we put out a cassette tape. So there's 500 copies of that, I believe, floating around somewhere out there. Granted, a lot of them probably have been destroyed by now, because who really listens to cassette tapes anymore? And we put out a CD also in 2000, I believe it was. So.
And are you currently in a band right now?
No, I'm currently not in a band right now.
Are you? But you? Do you still do kind of a guitar player for hire kind of thing when bands need somebody as a fill-in?
I used to, not so much anymore. Kind of just faded away from the music scene a little bit here in Denver. Just kind of got tired of it. But no, I still jam out with some people every once in a while.
Now, the Victoria Restorations, or Victorian Restorations, explain to me about this, because this is many different hobbies of yours. Go ahead with that.
Yeah, well, it kind of initially started out as a little business I was running, doing paper restoration, mainly chromolithograph restorations and art frame restorations, like the big gesso frames with the gold leaf on them. And a lot of reverse glass restoration. So I was doing that, and it was something I really loved doing. I still love doing, just something that's not very economical to live off of. You know, not everyone has $1,000 to put into a print to have it restored. So,
sure.
You know, there's kind of a niche market there. And then it kind of turned into somewhere where I kind of posted some of the vintage baseball stuff, and through the paper restoration, I got into sign painting, and I post a lot of my sign painting there, and I kind of run a bit of a sign painting business and do all the sign painting for the vintage league here. A lot of sandwich board signs, and then all our score plaque signs, and I'm always open for anyone, you know, in the vintage baseball world that wants a sign painted, you know, for their clubs. So have at me.
You're also, collect beer signs, is that right?
Yeah, I collect Colorado, what they call Breweriana. So mainly pre-prohibition. So I kind of do that. Signs, you know, bottle openers, just anything, really. One of the pieces I'm actually trying to get a hold of is a baseball print from a brewery company called Neath Brewing here in town. And it's the team photo. It's pretty cool.
So
I know where it's at. I just need to, you know, get the guy to sell it to me.
Big Coors area out there. Are they still a big deal out there?
Coors is king out here for sure.
And
they are definitely having a run for their money with all the microbreweries now, that's for sure.
Do you think there's going to come a time where some of these microbrews start fading out, Like, is this a fad that just happened to last a little bit longer than a normal fad, and then everyone's just going to go back to normal, cheaper beer?
I a little bit, I think. You know, there's always going to be the people that want the better tasting beer, and I see it as, you know, the bigger companies are going to buy up some of these smaller breweries and, you know, maybe keep a beer or two of theirs around to sell, you know. That's what I kind of see eventually happening.
That's why
I go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I demand it.
I was going to say, I like a lot of the microbreweries. You know, I really haven't had a beer I totally hate. You know, I'm not the biggest on IPAs, but I'll still drink one.
I'm going to an event tonight in just a couple hours, actually. It's called the Brouhaha, which is they try to mix stand-up comedians with a giant beer tasting event where all the breweries in Michigan come out and they can bring five flavors with them. And so you go around, you get a pint glass, you go around, you taste all these beers, and then they'll bring you into the auditoriums for stand-up comedy. But I don't go for the comedy, because when everyone's in the comedy show, that's the high time to get whatever beer you want.
Yeah, and stuff. Well, yeah. There's no line at the beer tank, so
there's no lines, and so that's going to be a good time. Now, if you listen to the podcast, and now I have archives, and that's exciting to me, Cooper. Is now you are episode number 4, I believe. So now I officially have archives. So every other week,
awesome, that's great.
Every other week I do a phone interview, but the every other week off that is an interview I did in person at a brewery with somebody. I'm going to Supernatural Brewing in Canton, Michigan next week for some interviews. And I like awesome. Beer. Beer is good.
Yeah. my stomach definitely is showing the fact that I like beer. That's for sure.
What's your favorite beer?
Odd as it is right now, I'm really liking the Corona Familiar right now. It's kind of a darker version of Corona. That's kind of a mainstream beer, I guess I should say, that I like right now. There's a Boulder Brewery here in Boulder, Colorado. They have the Boulder Beer Shake, and it's a porter, but it's like drinkable Jesus, you know. Pardon for my, blasphemous language, but I mean, it's drinkable Jesus. Except the word on the street is that they may be closing down, but we'll find out on that one. So maybe that is starting to come to an end.
Yeah, the Corona Familiar, I'm a beer distributor. I'm a beer delivery guy. So that's one of the things in my area I deliver. It seems to do, it doesn't have a wide distribution percentage around here, but it seems to sell where it's at. So, say it's a darker Corona, but how, compare the taste of that to a normal Corona.
I mean, compared to a normal Corona, it's just, you know, a little more, I'm not sure if that's my phone or something, but just a little more amberish flavor, just overall kind of a more complex taste, not, you know, light, crisp, you know, but it's just kind of something different as far as, you know, a mainstream beer. You know, I kind of got tired of the, you know, quote unquote Rocky Mountain Coors water, so.
But Coors Light is so good.
Oh, yeah, Coors Light.
Coors Light is amazing.
I've definitely put away a few 12-packs of those.
Remember when Coors came out with the cans that the mountains would turn blue when the beer was cold?
Yeah, and they never really worked or anything. Yeah, I think they still do that.
They do. I don't even notice. All right, Cooper, go ahead and give me, and I don't expect the tippy top answer on this, but give me an on the field memory, vintage baseball wise, and an off the field vintage baseball memory, both of which you cherish?
And this is kind of one of, you know, kind of just been struggling with, just because there's so many, you know, different moments, you know. One of the on the field moments was watching my dad get a home run. You know, that was pretty awesome to watch him get a, you know, home run. And, you know, off the field, you know, I'm going to have to probably pass on the off the field. I really, you know, don't have much to say. You know, anytime I go out with the guys after a match, you know, off the, you know, it's great. So
how about a 1400 mile car ride with your dad to Michigan?
Oh, hey, I do that again. If I could have the time off work and you guys are having a festival this weekend and I'd be driving right now. You know, there's some of the hardcore of us out here that, you know, pretty much go to every game regardless of what team is playing. So it was worth it. I definitely drive that again, no problem.
Have you
on my head, so to speak.
Have you made the trip to the Field of Dreams?
No, we've been talking about that, and I think the other one they're talking about is, I believe it's the Sandlot Field that they're, you know, people are doing stuff at now. So we've talked about it. I'm not sure. There's one of the guys that's kind of heading that up. I'm not sure what kind of headway he's made on it. So
yeah, they're going to probably be a little bit busy this summer with the
yeah, which I think is silly. You know, I'm sure people are going to, you know, reprimand me for this, but yeah, I think it's silly, the game, the major league game they're doing out there, you know, because it's not even on the field that, you know, the Field of Dreams is at, because they're building a new field next to it. So whatever.
Well, I could be mistaken.
Selling tickets.
Yeah, I could be mistaken on this, but I think the company that bought the Field of Dreams a handful of years ago has had this idea of building baseball diamonds to surround that field and to bring in baseball events and everything to play around the Field of Dreams, to make it a baseball complex. So I think what Major League Baseball has done is
kind of doing a kickoff of it.
Yeah. I think that they're building that stadium for that match, and they're kind of donating it as that's going to stay there. It's not going to be tore down I think it's the start of that process, but I think that's more of me trying to put two and two together of things I've heard, and it's just adding up to four right now. But it was an incredible experience, because it won't take away.
I've been through there. We stopped there to kind of look at it and visit it real quick when I was probably 12, 13, driving across town on our way to New York, which part of our New York trip was going to Cooperstown. So that was pretty awesome going to those two places, you know, in one trip. So
what is the origin of the name Soda Boots?
My Soda Boots origin is, well, with a name like Cooper Michael, I never really got a nickname unless it rhymed with Cooper, and everyone knows where that goes, you know, Cooper Scooper. So I wasn't really going to have that as a handle. And the only nickname I was kind of ever given was by a buddy, and that was Soda Boots. And me and this buddy were at a bar one time down in Denver. And I mean, it wasn't, you know, too crowded or nothing at this point. And just another random patron, you know, came up and, you know, like purposely, you know, spilled soda on us and like on, you know, our feet. And I just bought this brand new pair of cowboy boots, the kind of like that kind of yellow natural kind of cowboy boots. And so it ruined them. And I ended up getting a fight with the guy and everything, you know, not too many punches were thrown by the time security kind of, you know, broke up. And ever since then, my buddy called me Soda Boots. You know, he thought it was hilarious. So that's the origin of Soda Boots.
So is it pretty much the way it is that when you own a pair of cowboy boots, if anybody spills a carbonated beverage on them, you are to go to blows. Is that understood?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, but what if it's Sprite?
Don't mess with the man's cowboy boots.
If it was Sprite, though, I mean, don't you put some weatherizer on those boots to where it just would drip off? Don't you have that spray? Or
I mean, you can put it, but it's only so effective.
I mean, I'm just imagining if you spray them and then it's like a Sprite, something that's clear, like a Fresca. Okay.
So that's kind of where I got it. And the other kind of odd thing is me and a couple of the other guys on our association typically play barefoot. So I have a handle of soda boots and I play barefoot. So who knows?
You play barefoot?
Yeah, we play vintage ball barefoot. Actually, we were trying to get the corn shuckers, to play barefoot with us there on that cornfield.
You play barefoot in a field that could have a rattlesnake in it?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not like the rattlesnakes are, a constant threat. I've actually lived here my whole life, never seen a rattlesnake in the wild. So 38 years, I haven't seen a rattlesnake here.
Well, now you sound disappointed.
Yeah, I'm sorry to kind of burst your bubble.
No, you sound like you're disappointed. You've never seen one.
Yeah, I am kind of disappointed because everyone in my family has pretty much seen one, in the wild. Not me.
All right, so now I'm going to try out a new segment on the show. This is the first time I'm doing it. It'll have imaging and music and fanfare later on in my existence. But right now we're just going to do it a cappella. We're going to do a lightning round of questions. I'm just going to fire them at you, and you're just going to answer first thing that comes to your mind.
Blue.
Wow. It's amazing.
I thought we started
already. That is amazing. Ooh, I am the David Hasselhoff of podcast hosts. Like I am to podcasts what Hasselhoff is to American music. But I really hope to be
The best.
I'm going to be really big in Germany one day, and I think that's where I'm going with that. So,
that's awesome.
So here we go. First question. Like David Hasselhoff, if you were drunk on the living room floor with your daughter recording you, and you could eat any sandwich in the world at the time, what sandwich would it be?
Ooh, probably a Cuban sandwich.
What was your favorite toy growing up?
Oh, G.I. Joe.
What's your favorite position to play on the baseball field?
Favorite what?
Favorite position to play.
Oh, catcher.
Do you think cats live with regrets?
No.
Do you have Wendy's out in Colorado?
Yes, we do.
Do you ever put your French fries inside of a Frosty and eat it?
No, that's weird.
It's actually a big deal. Who is the...
I see a lot of people do it.
Who is the fictional character you would like to meet?
Fictional character. Holden Caulfield selling a punch his whiny, face in.
Oh my God. I'm going to write down that name. I'm writing down that name. I have to look that up.
Holden Caulfield, Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, see? Never read it.
It's overrated. It's a book about a whiny teenager.
So it's not about a sandwich? Because I'm really about sandwiches now, if you haven't.
No, I think there's a part where he eats a sandwich, but I'm not even sure if it's a rye sandwich in that either.
Yeah, I guess you just have to assume. But I'd really like it if it was, say, Catcher in, the Pumpernickel, because I would be I'd be big into that. Cooper, why do they put round pizzas in square boxes?
Because round boxes are just really hard to fold.
Okay. If do you have any pets?
I do. I have a chihuahua named Pico.
Pico?
Pico.
Like Pico de Gallo?
Like... No, it's more like, you know, a urination pee. It was named by a ex-girlfriend's, you know, son who was, you know, potty humor, you know, P-E-E-K-O, Pico.
Okay, but we're going to say Pico de Gallo because we like dogs. if you could ask Pico three questions, what would they be?
Why do you always whine at me? Where do you want to go? And what's your favorite park? I guess I'd like to know his favorite park.
Oh, what a good owner. You're a good owner, Cooper. You're a good owner. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. I want to thank Soda Boots.
Thank you.
For coming on the show. You don't know how bad this could suck. You don't know. You came on anyway. I appreciate it.
It wasn't bad at all. It didn't hurt any. You know, I guess it hurt a little, but not too much.
Wait until your friends get a hold of some of these.
Yeah, there's always that, but I'm sure they know worse about me.
Oh, sure. So thanks for coming on the show. And if you listened to this episode, please remember that next week, Ryan Boggs of the Ohio Village Muffins will be on the show. And every Wednesday, we drop a new episode right here on Roller Out the Barrel. And coming up in just a few weeks, we actually do have a special episode dealing with the 2020 Michigan Vintage Baseball Festival. That's scheduling and all about the skills competitions and Father's Day activities and everything we got going on. So you're going to want to listen to that. And thanks again for listening to the show. Bye, everybody.